What a beautiful day for a summer BBQ.
That's right. Feeling good, feeling relaxed, feeling comfortable.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brad, I don't mean to be checking out your ass in broad daylight, but you're looking mighty comfy. Is that new underwear?
I mean, normally that would be pretty creepy to say to a man, but under these circumstances, it's not, because I'm wearing Mack Weldon underwear.
Mack Weldon? Wait a second. Isn't that the premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics?
Darn right. Smart design, premium fabrics, and the best part, simple shopping. You know how I hate to shop.
Dude, I hate to shop. Every time you get on the website, there's not enough pictures, there's not enough sizes, not enough angles. It's bullshit.
Well, all you gotta do is go to MackWeldon.com. Easy to navigate, simple categories. Oh my God, they got underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants, anything you'll ever need, all the colors, all the sizes. You can't mess this up.
It'll be more comfortable than the cotton box that I'm wearing right now with the dick hole cut out.
Oh my God, you're still wearing that stuff? Go to MackWeldon.com. It's way more comfortable. Mack Weldon uses Pima cotton. Pima cotton is the softest cotton in the world.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's like comes from aliens or something. It's
wow.
Amazing. And
but it's comfy.
Oh, very comfy.
And when do you wear it?
You can wear it anytime. You can go to work, go out on dates, you can go shopping, wherever you're going, that's when you're wearing your Mack Weldon. You look good, you feel good, and you smell good, too.
Now, what if I'm trying to go to the 24-hour fitness and playing a pickup basketball game, and I'm having a game of games where it's like, if there were scouts here, I'd probably go pro. And then I'm going straight from there to a date. And I don't want to smell like shit and sweat and pubes.
Well, then just get their silver brand.
What's that?
Mack Weldon Silver are naturally antimicrobial. That means it naturally stops you from smelling.
Wow, that's fucking really glad I ran into you at this barbecue. Hey, I don't want to, you know, be presumptuous here, but There's a big bowl of new baked beans coming out.
Ooh.
And I know how you love your baked beans. Look
that's
at that.
That's pretty good. Yeah, look over there.
Give me those.
Hey, wait.
Give me those.
What are you doing?
Put on your pants. Give me your underwear.
You're trying to take my underwear.
I want your underwear.
I need an adult.
Give me no,
this
give
is
me underwear.
Get your own Mack Weldon. Just go to the website, MackWeldon.com.
Give me your goddamn underwear.
That, I will fight you.
Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code ALN. That's right. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code ALN. Start shopping, looking, and feeling better with Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, shirts, hoodies, you name it. They got it. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code ALN. Can I say it again? Yeah. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code ALN right now. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Thursday. Hope you've been having a great week. We had a killer goddamn Comedy Jam 3-year anniversary on Monday. Holy shit. If you came to that at the Roxy, Josh Adam Myers and the LMNOP band, what a show. Me, Bill Burr, Brad Williams, Nick Swartzen. I sang Walking on Broken Glass by Annie Lennox. Bill Burr was in character as Johnny Paycheck. So funny to see him go in and out of material as Bill Burr in the character. It was unbelievable. The Roxy's a sweet venue. The show was killer. So thank you if you came to that. Reminder, next Tuesday, July 18th at 8:30, Comedy Store Main Room is the next Adam Ray and Buddy show. Chris D'Elia, Theo Vaughn, Eliza Schlesinger, Tiffany Haddish, and David Spade. And two surprise guests. And they are fucking huge. I don't want to say who they are, but they are never at the Comedy Store, so it's going to be amazing. And I'll be on the show, too, of course. 8:30, July 18th, Tuesday, Comedy Store Main Room. Get your tickets at hollywood.comedystore.com. Speaking of Comedy Store, this guy, our guest today, is there a lot. He's everywhere. He's been doing comedy over 20 years. You know him from The Informant. He was the host of The Marriage Ref. He's been on Conan, Letterman, The Tonight Show. He's just one of the best comics working today. And it's Tom Papa. Yeah, man. He hosts the popular Come to Papa show on Sirius. Again, you know him from all the credits I mentioned, as well as his recent special on Hulu, Man Mule, which you should go watch because it's brilliant. This episode has it all, man, from his advice to Brad about having kids and getting married, to his stories about Greg Giraldo and becoming friends with Seinfeld and doing the Marriage Ref show and how it came to be, bread, his fascination for bread. He brought us homemade sourdough. The dude is just a nonstop working comic and is killing it at the top of the game. And it was really fun. Honestly, it was one of the most fun chats that I have had doing the podcast. So go check out a special, Man Mule. Follow him on Twitter at Tom Papa. Check out all his tour dates at tompapa.com. And follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, ALN Podcast on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. This weekend, no shows for me except for tonight at the Laugh Factory and tomorrow at the Laugh Factory. All those dates are at AdamRayComedy.com. That's right. My site changed from Adam Ray TV to Adam Ray Comedy to make it easier. And then next week, of course, Adam Ray and Buddies at the Comedy Store I just mentioned. All my tour dates for August, Denver, Austin, Chicago, Ontario, Irvine, all at AdamRayComedy.com. Oh, and I was just on the Adam Carolla podcast on Tuesday, so go back and listen to that episode if you haven't heard it. And I debuted my Reno, Nevada song, which you heard from the Live in Vegas podcast. And there's a video on my Facebook page. It'll be on the front of Chive and Funny or Die soon, but I had a music video, half music video, half animation from my buddy Tony Solano that is unbelievable. It's on my YouTube channel. It'll be on Chive this weekend, and but on my Facebook fan page. Just go check it out. I'm really pumped of with how it turned out. It's raw emotion, baby. True story. And a sweet melodic tune to go along with it. So go check it out. Brad Williams will be at the Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio this weekend. Go see Brad at Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio. Tickets at BradWilliamsComedy.com. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for your ALN merch. Just saw the designs today for our new hoodies and beanies. And they're fucking dope. I can't wait till the new site is up with the new merch. So be on the lookout for that. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes. Comment, rate the podcast 5 stars. And email us aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com with your ALN highlights, where you listen, how you get into it, what do you love about the pod. We'll read those comments on the air and have a chance to win some free merch. All right, now that we've got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the very funny Tom Papa.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. A dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
In staying true to the opening of your special, which I just watched, which was great.
Oh yeah,
that you filmed that how long ago?
Last July.
Okay.
A year ago. Human Mule?
Yeah.
Human Mule, yeah.
Right. You're talking about just people making plans and sticking to them. Could not be... First of all, it was. I was just so impressed and delighted to hear... Like, it's so crazy when you hear something in comedy and you're like, oh man, like with all the comedians we have and all the people, I've never heard somebody break that down. You know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
So, and then I'm just like, that is also something that could not be more true to... Like, it's not even like a generational thing. It's everybody.
Yeah, of
like
course.
Seven, like my 7-year-old nieces would be like, let's go to the park. And then 5 minutes later, like, but we could just stay here and watch Barbie Goes to, you know, Detroit again. Or what? I don't remember.
Barbie Goes to Detroit.
I don't remember what it was.
Was that a deep cut?
Too many of them.
Would you rather not go? Yeah, that's all right. We could just stay home.
It always takes that one person to cast a little bit of doubt. And then it's like, all right, we're all going to this. We're all going to dinner. Yeah. We're all going to see the show. We're all going to see the movie, then that one person just goes, I mean, we could stay in, and then everyone jumps on.
They don't even have to commit to that. All you have to do is ask it. You guys still want to go?
Dude, that's what you said. And you said you're basically like checking in on how much weakness they have.
Yeah. Do you want to do it? Why don't you want to go? No, I do.
No, I do.
Seeing if you don't want to do it. You know, I'm totally cool.
You're putting it on them, being like, I don't see if you want to pull the rug out from under these plans, because like I'm just going to plant that seed for you to grow the weakness
tree. I want to make you a piece of garbage.
I
totally follow through on everything.
Yeah, and then what's the other thing with adults where when we see people that we haven't seen in a while, we always do the thing of, you know, we should go out to dinner, we should do the thing, and then that never happens.
I know.
Why do we go through that social construct of like, let's make a plan?
You get excited, and I get excited when I'm drinking.
Yeah.
Then it's like, we're going to go away together.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's like, we're going to go to Catalina in 2 weeks. Let's do that thing.
You and really then it want never to. Happens. It sounds like a thing that you really should want to do.
Yeah.
Did that happen for you? Like, what is, I just want to know, like, life and comedy for you, like, at this stage versus, let's say, I don't know, 15 years ago?
Say again? What do you mean?
Life and comedy. Like, what were, Was Tom Papa 15 years ago? Were you a...
Where like, was I at 15 years ago?
Yeah, like, did this
ago?
Joke evolve, like, later in life? Or, like, were you a stick-to-the-plan
yeah.
guy?
Yeah, no, I always follow through. But I also think that it's not even an age thing. I think it's a... I think there's an East Coast part of it.
Yeah.
Where East Coast, you stick to your plans. Mm-hmm. People make plans, you kind of follow through, you do it. You know, like, even the suburbs, maybe a little bit less, but it's out here... It is flaky.
Yeah.
It is.
Why is
it's
that?
It's more fluid. It's more. I don't. You know why? Because your life. Because in New York, someone makes a plan to go do something. Mm-hmm. That is probably going to be the best thing you could go do. And everything else, sitting in your little crummy apartment, dealing with noise, all that other stuff is pales in comparison. Out here, your life is pretty sweet.
Yeah, right?
Any plan yeah. you make. There's a good chance it's going to be worse than what you're doing at home.
Yeah.
Oh. Like this, like your setup is, this is a nice place to be.
Yeah.
Once the sun starts going down and the music starts trailing sure. from the places around you.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I could go see Come to Papa live at the Largo, but I got incense candles.
Yeah. No, if I have two drinks, I'm not driving. Let's stay home.
How long did it take for you to put Human Mule together? Like, because that was your fourth special?
That was my fourth special.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That one was about, I would say, 2.5-3 years before from the last one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you set a timeline?
Like, no.
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 It's just, there's a handful of guys that are like, every year.
A handful.
Yeah. There's Louie.
It's
Louie.
Yeah. Louie did it.
Yeah.
And
I think like Burr and Jeffries are kind of in there.
They're kind of doing it.
Eliza's kind of in there too.
Everybody says that they want to do it. And then yeah. everyone's on this schedule. I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for these specials to be over.
Yeah.
I can't wait for them to die on the vine, which is, I think, what's starting to happen. There's way too many of them. And I just can't wait, just because I'm for comedians going and getting better and working on your stuff.
Yeah.
That's the job. That's the gig. That's what you do as an artist. What I do not enjoy is going to a club and hearing every comedian from the open mic to the best headliner saying, I'm working on my hour. I'm working on my hour. What are you doing? I'm working on my hour. I'm going to come down. I'm just working on my hour. I'm close to my hour. I'm almost done with my hour. I'm close to my hour. I don't care. Why is it called an hour? Why is it a time construct?
Yeah. Right.
How about I'm just working on my act?
Yeah.
And when it's good enough and people are really want to see it,
and when someone,
I might record it.
Yeah. And when someone demands it, when there's some sort of demand.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's always my favorite. I mean, I get it that everyone wants to get so big so fast in this business, but when the host is like, yeah, I've got my third album coming out, I'm like, why?
I'm taping my third DVD special at the Ha Ha.
I know.
The old Ha Ha.
I know. I mean, I started before people were, you know, I started in 93.
Yeah.
And at that time, you couldn't really record your own stuff. I mean, you could record little, you know, you couldn't put out an album on your own. It was just starting to happen where you can get like an MP3 recording of it, like just enough where you can make something.
Right.
Up until then, it was you had to be as great a comedian as you could be, and then somebody from a record company or somebody would come and say, we want to make your album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just waiting around, and people just started recording shit on their own.
Yeah.
And just making their own stuff, and it's like the level of it all just started to just come down.
Well, there's no real comedy police, right? Like for people running the light, for people stealing material, it's all kind of...
We're all sort of
self-policing each other. So even for specials, I mean, it's like I'm just now at the point where I'm like, you know, I'll be 10 years in the fall, and I'm like, all right, I'm starting to think like, all right, maybe like I have a lot of stuff that I would love to put down, but I still know that like I thought this last year, and now a year later, I'm like, thank God I didn't do it because I've got all this other stuff I would love to put on it. But I'm
sure
that happens all the time. But even I'm still kind of like, should I just do it myself or should I like... Personally, I kind of want to be on a show and have more... I want to have, like, a bigger reason to do it, but...
Yeah, no, look, there's nothing wrong with putting it out. When you personally think, I think this is done and I'd like to record this and then move on to something else and move into new... That's fine. There's nothing wrong with thinking
that. Is that a bad reason for wanting to do it?
That's
to just get rid of, to burn the...
No, it's not to burn it. I mean, you're a writer, so yeah. You've got to write, you've got to create, and at a certain point, you put it down, and then you move on to the next thing. But that's you. That's your personal thing. Brad has his own times. I have the stuff I'm working on now. But just that it's a herd mentality of we're all working on our hour, and then the hour has to come out, and who cares? And then what's happening is people are doing that and thinking they've got to get the... People are thinking that if I just get 60 minutes of talking, I've got an hour. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
Let that sit around for another year and a half. Half of that stuff isn't going to be good enough to be in the new route. It's not... It's become a time construct and a how quick am I doing it compared to the other guy.
Yeah.
And the level is all coming down. And the level of really great people is coming down. Their new things aren't as good because they're just... It's just a race. It's not... It shouldn't be a race.
Yeah. And then even like the top tier comics.
Yes.
There's so much demand on them from Netflix, from whoever to...
Yeah.
From HBO.
Because they're hungry, yeah.
Yeah. They're like, well, and then are they going to turn down $10 million?
No, I know.
No, they're not going to do it. They're just going to be like, oh, great. Yeah, I can have that special.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's the problem in the beginning when you don't have enough great stuff to do it.
Yeah.
And then there's the problem when you're really huge and... They want it really quickly.
Right.
And you're not going to have great stuff to give them.
Yeah, you didn't have 10 years to develop.
That's why, guys, I recommend we stay in the sweet middle spot. We stay in the just kind of slightly obscure. You got your fans, but no one's really... saying you've got to turn this in by
demand.
Next
no, there's no one's banging down Tom Papa's door like
I demand the next one.
I can come do a podcast with you guys in the middle of an afternoon.
Yeah,
this is the life you want.
It's you know what, and there's something to be said about that, especially now. Like I see what's going on in terms of fame and I go, oh, I don't want that.
But there's so few people that have that. I mean, you know, Amy Schumer and, and
Kevin Hart.
And I mean, you know, that's so small a percentage. I mean, you could have really good... You know, look, I know some of the biggest who won't turn out specials.
Well, yeah, I mean, your friend Jerry.
Yeah, that's one guy who...
Yeah.
And those guys come from a mentality of, no, you work on this thing until it is as great as possible. And you'd be humiliated to break it out earlier than that.
Yeah.
Now there's a middle ground. You know, there's you can now, like you're saying, like 10 years in, do I put something out? You kind of have to put stuff out.
That's why we're
sitting here right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is content. A content driven, people are digesting this stuff. You know, in the old days when Jerry and those guys were doing specials, it was a special. It came out. Everybody knew about it.
Right.
You saw that one guy. Now.
And then 5 years later,
you
did
another one. There's so much stuff coming through, and you could digest it so quickly.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, these guys could just take off on their iPhone and be looking at specials right now, and then watch 10 minutes and then blow out.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, I mean, there's a whole marketing angle and
vote.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
But just
vote. Yeah. That's what we're trying to say.
Just vote. Yeah.
I mean,
get tested.
I mean,
get tested. It's really not good to spread this around.
Yeah. I saw that billboard out there on Sunset. It's there's a billboard on Sunset right now that has a picture of a wave that says syphilis tsunami, get tested.
Oh, really?
And I'm just like, syphilis
is
like
that a thing?
STD plus natural disaster is home run billboard.
Yo, yeah,
absolutely.
That should be the name of your special.
Home run billboard,
syphilis tsunami.
That home run billboard.
I mean,
AIDS hurricane,
syphilis
AIDS
tsunami,
gonorrhea earthquake.
He's also so like a great Hootie and the Blowfish cover bands.
All my pontificating earlier is out the window. You should record tonight at the Laugh Factory and name it Syphilis Tsunami.
But you know what?
And I will buy the first copy.
I'm actually going to do 6 10-minute specials.
Yeah,
and just go the multiple special route.
Yeah, part two.
Has anybody ever, that would be, I mean, we are something. The age where people are like, I mean, Netflix, I feel like,
they
contribute to the problem of, you know, of just like so
too
many.
Much, yeah.
And because they were just like, well, fucking be the first one to just do them all. And, and people, I think, did want that much at first because people were excited like, oh, shit, new Aziz, new Amy, new Bill, new Dave. But like you just said,
it's too much.
You know, it's so funny because you were mentioning like, you know, feeling 10 years in, like, I don't know where I put that on myself. I must have heard it from... I feel like I heard it from a veteran comic that was just like, 10 years is like when you really get a grasp of who you are, and a good stopping point to put 10 years of material out. But also, it's like that's their opinion. And then when that's you hear, when you see, I get occasional tweets of like, "When's your special?" And even though it's like maybe five tweets over a month, I go, "God, everybody wants one." You know, you're like,
"There's a demand."
Yeah.
So,
Skank Hunt 4242 in Omaha really wants this special to come out.
In my aunt's defense, that she wanted her name as her Twitter handle, but that was taken. Yeah. So
she had to go with Skank Hunt 4242.
Brad mentioned Jerry and just like his process, but like, and I want to know, I mean, I have a lot of questions about your friendship with him, but did he ever, at what point did you maybe feel comfortable to ask him for like just comedy, or would you just naturally talk about it and it like
he loves to
advice
talk.
Would come up organically?
He just, you know, I don't think I ever just came out with, you know,
you got, how do you hold
tips?
The mic?
You got any tips?
You got any tips?
Such a broad thing.
But he loves talking about comedy so much.
That's awesome.
He's just a scientist about it. So you just hang around him, you're going to naturally talk about it. And
sure.
I started hanging out with him in New York when he was coming back to stand-up. And we just started hanging at the clubs with Colin Quinn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his whole crew was gone. There was nobody to hang with. So I was just trying not to be annoying so I could still hang out. And like everybody else was freaked out. But you know, I think what helped was that I wasn't watching his show a lot because I was out of clubs trying to become a stand-up comedian. So I knew he was famous, but it didn't jar me to the point of like, oh, I can't be myself and hang with this guy.
And you weren't like telling him like, so how did you come up with the idea of the Puffy Pirate Show?
Right,
like,
exactly. I had no interest. I didn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was definitely just so I'd say like the first like 6 years of hanging with him, I was just a sponge.
Yeah,
I literally just learned everything. How he wrote, how he carried himself, how he dealt with people, how he handled himself for late night shows, how he had, I mean, everything, every aspect. Yeah. I was just, you didn't have to ask. You just had to hang around. And it helped because his work style is similar to mine. Like, I sit down, I write, I do this.
You do?
Yeah, I do that kind of stuff. So at the time when he showed up, I was confused. I didn't know. You know, well, Eddie Izzard just goes up and wings it, and Chappelle doesn't write stuff down ever. And then he came along, and he kind of confirmed what my instinct was, and I think that became like a really, like, that was all you need early on is somebody to confirm that you're not an idiot for being in this business.
Totally.
Yes.
You just need someone to say, hey, you're funny, you're good.
Yeah.
And accept that you for being there.
That process is good. That works.
Yeah. Like, you know, you just want to hear from someone good that you're good enough to be around. And they don't even come out and say it. They just treat you like a comic. So you're like, okay, he's given me a stamp of approval and he seems to be affirming the way I'm doing it. That was the biggest thing.
Was there... How did you meet him again? It was just through hanging
at Stand Up New York this one week. I was when you're on stage at Stand Up New York, you could see the bar through the window, and he was sniffing around. He was coming, watching shows. He was around for like a little bit before going on stage, and I saw him through the window come in one night while I was on stage. So I tried to be really funny. Then the next night, same thing. I'm on stage and he comes in with his baseball cap. And I threw out a whole bunch of new stuff to let him know that I have other stuff.
Yeah. Good move.
And I came off at the bar and he said, hey, you're really funny. And I was like, all right, that's
thank,
it, made.
Thank you,
I mean,
you,
that's
Mr.
it.
Seinfeld.
It's all you want. Yeah. You just want to hear, like, he was sincerely saying, not just like, you could tell, it wasn't like, you know, he wasn't blowing smoke. It was, and we talked for a couple minutes, and then we saw each other at the Cellar, and that was it. We just, you know, my style is similar to him. I'm not douchey. There was a lot
not
of
particularly dirty, just kind of observational.
Yeah,
write stuff down.
Brilliant,
like you say.
Brilliant. A lot of people use the term genius.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah.
People just say that prolific. A lot.
Never been said. Never been
very
done.
Prolific. Yeah.
Next level. Next level. Papa is what I've heard said a lot at the Dave and Buster's and Rancho Cucamonga.
Hey, wait! But before we go on,
yeah,
you're thinking Garland's.
Oh, handsome.
Handsome.
Oh, yeah.
amazing.
Oh, thanks.
You're really good.
Oh, thanks.
No, you really can act. I mean, I know you know this, but you can. But
I went to school for 4 years for it. I feel like I should be okay.
I mean, it really was.
This is Adam Ray's moment, like when Jerry Seinfeld told you, "You're really funny."
Yeah.
He's having this moment right now in front of us.
It fucking kind of is, man.
No, but I mean, it really was just like, oh, this. I mean, we had a lot of friends in that.
Yeah,
and I love them all.
Yeah,
but your role was like, oh, there's like a weight to this. He has to do something, but you could tell the motivation and the guy is completely different from what he's doing. Like, it was real.
Oh, thanks, man.
Real acting.
That
was
good. I mean, Garland's, you know, just as you are, someone I've looked up to in comedy, and so to to just put me, and you know what,
you're the greatest. I got a part for you. Yeah, I'm gonna put you in Handsome. You're gonna play this guy.
Just say something. She's gonna come up. Just give her say something.
Dude, totally. Yeah. And he would like, you know, it was so, because Curb's my favorite show, and he, you know, helped me get an audition, and so I got it. I did an episode for this new one.
Oh,
and
that's
like,
great.
And it's, but he's such a, like, you know, just so, you know,
gregarious.
Yeah. And very just supportive and like and giving too in the scene, and like would stop and say like, do this or do that, and but also like very much like, hey, you know what you're doing, so trust what you're doing. And like, that's really big in a director.
It was great. And Brad,
yes, I've done things.
It's the compliment. Welcome back to the compliment hour.
You and I, no, this isn't a compliment because we haven't done it yet.
Oh,
but you and I have something in the end of August.
What do we do?
Yeah.
What do we have?
We're doing a pilot.
We are?
Yes.
Brad?
What pilot am I doing?
Brad, I told you this.
Brad, and you were supposed to tell me everything.
That's
about the rule
it.
Of friendship.
Oh, that's right. You texted me.
He knows
me.
Nothing about it, but yes, we're going to be shooting a couple. It's not a big thing, but it's a thing.
Well,
it could become a big thing.
That makes me happy.
You don't have to audition. You're in it. You're the guy.
That's awesome.
That's right.
I cannot say what it is. I cannot explain the role.
I will. It's Chuck E. Cheese Ball Pit Fights, Volume 4.
Damn it. Who told?
It's me versus Wee Man. It's finally happening.
Wait.
Ball Pit Fights.
Can I just say what your name is?
Sure.
Razzles.
That sounds like something that would pop up in the 1967 Batman when, like, he punched somebody. Pow, pap, Razzles.
That's really funny. Quick.
Yeah, we're gonna be doing it. It's
That's right.
Directed by Rob Zombie.
What?
You never told me that. You never told me.
Top secret. That's all I can say. I can't say anymore.
Well, because I know Zombie
stop
directed.
Stop with the questions.
Zombie
back
directed
off with
one
the,
of your.
Stop.
Things. I have so many things now.
No.
Zombie directed one of your specials.
Two of them.
Which, first of all, how does that happen? The guy's a metal god and a horror film guy. Like, how does he direct a comedy special?
Well, I know this is a podcast, but can't you see that I have a badass look to me?
I mean,
don't you think, like, who
I'm
would be
threatened.
In Rob Zombie's crew? It would be.
That's a great game show, by the way. Who would be in Rob Zombie's crew?
Yeah, that would be a good one.
You would definitely be the Dark Horse candidate of that. No one looks at Tom Papa with the, like, on the cover art of your special human mule that has you with all the kid stuff on your back, being like, I bet you that guy hangs out with
zombies. Yeah, he's a zombie guy.
I appreciate the acting compliment, but I need to throw it right back at you. Behind the Candelabra, you were fucking incredible, dude.
Thank you.
And, like, I think that what was the Matt Damon movie that...
The Informant.
Yes.
Informant.
Great in that. I think that was
both
first.
With Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, both Soderbergh.
Which one was first? The Informant, right?
I only get hired by one guy.
Me too.
And
Paul Feig.
He's
Soderbergh.
A genius. And I don't know why the other geniuses don't catch on and say we can put him in our stuff too.
Look, Spielberg, I heard, just followed you on Facebook. So give him some time.
So annoying.
But that was, I mean...
But that was great.
Dude,
no, that was
so
incredible.
Good.
Both
man.
Of those were great. And just... being able to hang with those guys, just being in, there's one time in Candelabra where it's me in the scene, it's on the screen as you're sitting at home watching, it's me, Matt Damon, Michael Douglas, and Dan Aykroyd.
Oh,
and it's like,
God.
One of these is not like the other ones.
Yeah. Do you step out of your body at that point? You have to, right? Like, you're still a fan of all this stuff.
No,
I think nobody gets completely over it.
No, of course not. Okay. And I think nobody does. And even at the biggest levels, they don't. I think, you know, some stuff gets a little... You don't want to... there was one moment where during the Informant, I was with Rick Overton.
Great.
Right? He's great. He's a comedian. He acts like we do. You know, he's not a movie star, but he's in stuff.
Popping up.
Yeah, and he's on I'm Dying up here right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's we're in this scene of The Informant. It's me, Matt Damon, and Rick Overton in this limo, and we have to keep there's no air conditioning, and we have to drive up the limo pulls up, we get out of the car and we do our thing. And it's, something's happening. There's some sound issues. We have to do it like 3 or 4 times. And Matt's hot. He's got a lot of stuff to do. This is our only scene for the day. We don't care. And I'm just trying to act like we've been there before. Like, just, you know, just be cool.
Act like you've been in the scene with Matt Damon in a Soderbergh movie before.
Just kind of, give a heavy sigh. I can't believe we got to do this again.
This old chestnut.
Rick lets out. Rick is totally honest in himself and doesn't censor himself at all. And he's just like, oh, we're going to be talking about this scene for years. I'm like, no, Matt's not going to talk about this at dinner. No.
Yeah,
you're going to talk about this for years.
This is just a fart in the wind to Damon.
Yeah, just act like you've been there before.
Which, that should be the name of your second special, Fart in the Wind.
Okay, so what was the first one? AIDS hurricane? No, syphilis tsunami.
Syphilis tsunami. Fart in the wind.
Is syphilis a thing again?
Yeah. What a great question.
You know what? It's so weird you say that. It is, and Adam always makes fun of me because I know the most random-ass facts. But yes, CNN just tweeted out like 3 days ago that there's a new strand of syphilis that is incurable. That's
incurable.
It's making the rounds. So,
guys, you hear that? I brought my daughter and my nephew and their friends.
And that's one way of getting kids not to do that kind of thing.
Syphilis is bad. And you know what syphilis
does?
So
is the McRib, by the way.
Did you watch The Nick on... did you watch The Nick, that Soderbergh thing?
You were in The Nick.
I didn't bring it up for that reason.
Okay, but you were in The Nick with Clive Owen.
It was a medical drama from the turn of the century.
Wow.
And when people got syphilis, their nose fell off.
Oh, right.
It ate the cartilage in your nose, and your nose falls off.
God. The Sphinx had syphilis?
Yes.
That's
Can
a
you
reference
imagine
gets.
Being alive? Like, what time period was that?
1900.
Yeah. Can you? I mean, like, what a bummer for the people that are still around, or that were around, and like,
You meet a gal, you meet a gal, you have a couple cocktails, and now your nose falls off.
Although I can't, there is one positive side to that, because then you knew who had syphilis. You could walk around.
That's true.
Yeah, no,
like, no one can hide it.
Don't fuck her. Don't fuck her. Stay away from that. No,
I don't have herpes.
Now
where's your nose?
Now it's like you see some girl. She's got pink highlights and she's got a weird '80s band T-shirt on. Yet she wasn't born in that era. And yet she has. You're like, that looks like a good time. And then. Syphilis. Oh. And then syphilis tsunami. That happens.
You don't have a nose.
So did you become buds with Soderbergh and Damon, and that helped for Candelabra, or did you audition? Yeah.
Well, I mean, because they were so for Candelabra, brilliant. I just got a tweet one night.
What?
A text from Soderbergh just saying, I'm putting you in the gayest movie of all time.
Oh my God, dude, that's unbelievable.
And you're like,
and I was like,
the
great.
Richard Simmons story?
I was in New York. Hilarious. I was just like, great. I was in bed.
Yeah.
And then I told my wife, Steven's going to put me in the gayest movie of all time. And then we tried to go to sleep. And then I was like, picked up my phone 15 minutes later and texted him back. What do I have to do?
I love that you waited for that.
Yeah.
I love that your immediate thought was, I'm in.
I'm in.
Do you want me to pitch? Do you want me to catch? What do you want me to do?
I'm in. And then it was Candelabra.
What was it like acting with somebody to the stature of Matt Damon? I mean, and again, like any... Did you go out, like, the first TV job I ever did was According to Jim, and I definitely, Henry Winkler, I went to school with Max's son, so he became kind of a mentor for me for a little bit, so I would ask him for advice for certain things every now and then. So when I did that, it was first TV job for sitcom job, and I was like, any advice? And he was like, treat Mr. Belushi like an emperor. You're not there to fill space. If you think of something funny, say it. They picked Adam Ray because they love Adam Ray. All the best. And I was like, see you later. But so I'm curious, like, in that situation, would you be like, hey, Damon, like, this is, like, you're a pro, any...
Call him by the last name only?
Yeah, I think you just, I don't think there's definitely those moments. You just have to, you can't psych yourself out. You're sitting there with Michael Douglas or Matt Damon and, in Soderbergh, and it's just like, just be cool and just, the hardest one was The Informant, because that was the first one.
Right.
And I got the job. They put a lot of comedians in it. And
how much acting had you done prior to this?
I acted all through school.
Okay, cool.
And I could do it. I know how to act.
Where was school again?
I wasn't worried about that. I went to Rider.
Nice.
In New Jersey, which wasn't a big program, but I was I could be the leads and everything. So
okay,
I was
so you
like,
did, all right, great.
Yeah, and I studied
so
it.
So if you go
New
back
York
there,
and,
there's the Tom Papa Theater at Ryder.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It'd be amazing.
I'm sure. So
did you love it in college?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, no, completely.
I assume that in watching you in these performances, I'm like, there's no, because, you know, some comics have no training and they'll go to some, get some classes, and then all of a sudden, either they'll do it or they won't. So, but there's certain people you watch and you're like, no, there's a back, there's a history there.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Okay. It was, and I knew I wanted to do it, but I was an athlete all through school as a kid.
That's what I think.
And so I couldn't go into drama and stuff. I was like, I literally, I was captain of the football team.
Oh,
I was track. I was all that stuff. I didn't, from kindergarten until 12th grade. But I wanted to act, and I literally went to Ryder because they didn't. They got kicked out of the league. They couldn't have football.
What?
And my father was kind of pushing me, like, you could do Division III. You could play Division III.
What
ball.
Did you play?
I was fullback.
Holy shit.
So you
fast.
So you opened up the holes.
Yeah, exactly.
There it is.
Blocking back.
Tom Knight.
And I was like, but I purposely went there because they did not. They had drama and they didn't have football.
So you forced yourself.
Yeah.
And you knew, wow. And you probably knew that there was... innately that, like, football, you weren't going to pursue that.
No,
post.
I could play for 4 years, but then for what? I wasn't loving it at that point anymore. I'm like, it's not going to be a career. It's not going to be what,
like,
I want to do.
Best case scenario is they ask you to be an assistant coach after you graduate.
Yeah.
You're like, great.
Yeah.
I'll be the fullbacks coach.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Not my thing.
I got to grow a hell of a mustache to do that.
Right, exactly. I got to get a whistle.
I quit football. It's amazing how similar your and I's stories are. I quit at sports and drama with my things, and I quit football my sophomore year of high school to play Danny Zuko in Greece because I couldn't do both.
Yeah.
And then it was the same thing where it was
the coach pissed?
So pissed.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote my college essay on it because it was like this thing where, and I've told a story before, but I you know, I was telling my mom, I was like, God, the director of the play, which, and the program was such a big deal in our, we went for field trips in elementary school, now I'm in high school, and it's this big community. I mean, it's great productions.
Big deal.
And so it was the first chance to get a lead because I'd been an ensemble my freshman year. And he was like, I'm not telling you you're going to get it, but, like, you should audition. And the only other kid auditioning was a kid named Danny Park, an Asian dude. So, like, I had pretty good odds.
Yeah. And rocking the hair.
That would have been a different version.
Yeah.
And not a bad version, a different version.
Yeah.
And so I went to my mom. I was like, I think I should, like, I want to do the play. She's like, what do you want to do? I go, I want to do the play. I feel like I'm doing football to please the coach. She goes, and there's your answer.
Yeah.
But now I got to tell him. And so I went in one day during weight training, summer weight training. I was like, coach, I think I'm thinking about doing not playing this year. And same thing. I was going to start varsity as a sophomore because the offensive guard ahead of me was injured.
Yeah.
Maybe sophomore captain. So all this responsibility. And I was like, I think I'm going to do the play this year and take a year off.
Tough.
And he's like, come back in 2 weeks and tell me the right answer. And this was stereotypical, the most intimidating coach you could imagine in any situation.
And you're telling me, like, but I'm only against an Asian guy and I could get the role because I'm not saying Summer Ruvin.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Dude, Brad, that's so great, dude. I'm probably going to put that in a bit.
Please do.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Summer Ruvin, good night, everybody. Just going to be Adam and Tom for the time.
Leave on that, actually.
I peaked.
So I went back. Yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Tom, I really like your stuff. All right, good meeting you.
So I went back in and told him, and then he just, and I was like, and I tried to make a joke out of it. I was like, I can't memorize the playbook this year because I'm going to try to memorize the lyrics to Grease Lightning. And he just pauses and goes, get out of my office. And that was it. And then he ended up bringing his kids to the matinee, the last matinee, and, like, walked out to the lobby and was just like, oh, you're not bad. You sing pretty good. My kids liked it. See you during basketball
season.
That's
so hard. That's like telling your parent that you're not...
Totally.
That you're
straight.
Moving out.
What?
But I love that you had the a similar dilemma.
It's hard. It's a hard thing to do.
But you didn't even look back, right?
And I mean, it's so ingrained in you, and you've been doing it for so long, and
sure.
It's a difficult thing. You're getting approval from these people, but something at some age, something starts to pop up in you, and you start to, if you have an idea of, like, what you really want to do, mm-hmm. it kind of...
It's pretty amazing when
you look back.
And
it's not even... It kind of is going to happen. Like, you don't realize when you're a kid, like, I didn't realize, like, it just is taking over. You just start making these decisions and you start moving in this direction. It's just happening because it's in you. It's just innate.
And to be just somewhat cognizant of the magnitude of that decision, like, had I not done that, because after I did that play, it was just the most unbelievable show. Like, it was so, like, heavily praised and so fun. The experience is what made me go, oh, I think acting is what I want to do. And so, and had I not done that, because I was so close to just giving in and being like, oh, maybe I'll do football. And that put me on the path to then think about auditioning for schools and, you know, getting to SC to come down here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done any of that.
None of that. I hosted the talent contest at the school, which was a big thing. It was a huge like production. And I was the captain of the football team, but I was also the class clown.
That's amazing.
So I had
you were like the funny guy in school. Everybody, yeah.
And I remember one time being, I had to lead the stretching, you know, for the practice. You'd all go, and I was just like making everybody laugh and everything in the locker room. And we were having a great time. And then we got out there, and I'm like yelling at my friends, "Get down!" And my friend Joe was like, You got to give me a minute to shift and try.
Locker room mode.
You're still fun Tom. Now you're like boss Tom. It's hard for me to switch. So I hosted. it's so lame, but I hosted the talent contest as Pee Wee Herman. It was movie was out, and I had a bike and a suit, and I did the whole thing, and I could do the impression, and I hosted as that, and I was doing bits. Like I actually had bits. And it was lame and it was stupid, but it was the first time I was up on stage, like getting laughs from people.
Did something and it was for just you? Like, it was like, oh, this is awesome.
I mean, I was always headed that way.
Yeah.
But that was like, this is awesome.
You were doing it in smaller circles prior to that?
Like, oh, yeah. I was always making people laugh and that kind of thing.
How so? Like, what was your, I don't know, way of doing it?
I had
impressions,
just tons. Just
commentary on just,
tons. I mean, I had, it was really like seventh grade when everybody in my town would go away to camp. Mm-hmm. And we didn't go to camp, and it was mostly a Jewish area, and all those Jewish kids would go to camp, and then we just kind of like hung out and went to the pool, and there weren't a lot.
Brad,
of kids
don't make a Holocaust joke. I saw you biting your lip, you son of a bitch.
The sad part is I was thinking, and I was like, that way. Jews going to camp. Dude, that's never ended poorly.
No, you know what, man? All right, you got.
And I was hanging out with all older kids.
Oh, mm-hmm. Shit.
And the only way to kind of be cool was...
Gotta make them laugh.
I was funny. That was my place. So, like, the girls would like me and the guys would... I was funny enough to hang out.
It's not the best.
Yeah, so that was like...
Older kid approval in seventh grade is maybe the best kind of approval.
One of my best bits, though, was... I had two lame bits. One was in second grade. For some reason, Rhinestone Cowboy was a big song. I'm a Rhinestone Cowboy.
Yes, yes, dun, yes. Dun.
And for some reason, I had a banana, and I had a banana peel. And just in the middle of class, school is going on. And I just walked to the front of the class and had worked out a song, Rhinestone Banana, in my head, and stood up and twirled it around and shook my hips and sang Rhinestone. And she's like, sit down.
We're learning multiplication.
But I went through the whole song, and I was like, all right, this is all right. I went back to my seat. Like, that was a pretty good bit. I think that was good.
Did you try to work it out like the next day? Like, all right, I'm going to try to do this dance move instead.
Yeah, you're like, there was no Twitter back then, but you're like, that girl looked at me. So it's like your thing of like, come, you know, give me your special.
Yeah. Oh,
but then
God.
I had my other good bit. I had a good bit when I was like a sophomore.
I love that you're referring to them as bits.
Remember those? Remember when, like, for Italian ice, we get the wooden spoon?
Oh, yeah. You know, samples and all that.
Yeah, and they have like, it's kind of a little circular wooden spoon. I would draw a different character on each one, and I would do impressions for all of them. So I would have like Michael Jackson, and I would have like six, I would have like 10 of them in my hand.
Oh my God.
And I would do Michael Jackson, I would bring up, and so I would just come up to a girl and be like, hey, what's going on? What are you doing, Tom? And then Ebony and Ivory. And I would bring out the Michael Jackson one. Then I would flip it, and it would be Stevie Wonder. And then I would do that, and then I would flip it, and I would have all of these different impressions. That was another bit I would just keep in my pocket.
Holy crap! Yeah, you're killing.
I had a lot of bits.
Yeah. Where did this go to bits? That's amazing.
Performer in you, was that? I mean, as a kid too, were you like home movie kid, like always doing like plays for the family and stuff like that?
I was always funny in the family. It wasn't a very funny family.
Oh, really?
Everyone was, it wasn't heavy, but no one was just that talented.
Except for me, Tom Papa.
Did you do it out of default?
My mother was funny. My mother was really funny.
Because I think everybody has to see some of it at home a little bit, right?
Yeah, my mother would do voices. She would do voices of everybody in our life, and she would imitate everybody.
That's so awesome.
Probably saw the reaction she was getting, like, I want that reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any impression or something she would do that really got to you, like a garbage man or a pet or a...
Yeah, she would do all our friends and stuff. And then I remember she got a Lily Tomlin album. And she was doing her a lot.
As the kid character?
The operator. Remember. There was like the operator.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And she started doing all those.
Hey guys, hope you're enjoying the episode. Brad Williams and Adam Ray here. Just want to tell you guys real quick about one of our new sponsors that we are fucking loving. And I say loving with a capital L and a capital oving.
That's right. Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon.
Heard of them?
Premium menswear. This stuff is so comfortable. They sent us a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
The underwear is fantastic. And the underwear doesn't make you smell. It's antimicrobial.
I didn't know what that was, a word or a thing.
I had to Google it 4 or 5 different times, but apparently it's awesome.
That to me is always the strong sign of a dope clothing company. A, that has clothes that fit you and are super comfortable. And like, we both got these and we were a little skeptical because they claim to be the most comfortable clothes. And then we both put them on and we're like, oh shit, like the socks are as comfy as the underwear are as comfy. Comfy as the hoodies are as comfy as the sweatpants.
I'm wearing a sock on my dick right now.
Yeah, I know. And I love that about you. You're a sock dick now.
Yep.
And, you know, when they have like antimicrobial things, it just, to me, that's always like they're going above and beyond and really trying to cater clothes and make clothes that are not only comfortable and look good, but like feel good on your body. And that's the whole point of wearing clothes, right?
That's right, Adam. So go to MackWeldon.com and use promo code ALN to get 20% off right now.
That's a lot of percent. And the clothes are so comfortable, if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it anyway, and they'll still refund you. No questions asked. Who else does that? Does Quiznos?
No.
Fucking no, man. Go to MackWeldon.com right now. And now back to the episode.
Was there a moment, did you have kind of an aha moment where you realized, like, this is like later in high school, where you go, oh, I could actually make a career doing this. Like, I could...
Yeah, it wasn't until I heard the first comedy album. I was in my neighbor's house, and it was all the older brothers, and me and my friend got to sit in with these 8 guys or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were listening to Steve Martin's Let's Get Small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard a comedy album before.
Yeah.
And they're passing around the album, and we're listening to him, to his stuff. And I was like, I remember like literally thinking, oh, wait a minute. Like, this is a grown-up that does this for a living.
Yeah.
And then literally, like, 2 weeks later, I heard George Carlin's Class Clown at another friend's house.
There you go.
And then I was like, all right. Then I just started just gobbling up who these guys were.
Right. And also, especially with those two albums, you have one that's, like, absurdist.
Yeah.
And then the other that's, like, the most intelligent, like, political life commentary ever.
It was
so
crazy.
Yeah. So to have that range, you're like, oh, you can do anything.
Yeah. It was pretty, it was a real education. It was like, okay, so grown-ups can do this. This can be a living.
Yeah.
And I knew in seventh grade, I literally knew that that's where I was going
to
go.
Did you have any idea what to do to be a comedian? Or you're just like, that's what I want to do, but I don't know how to do it.
I didn't figure that. I really couldn't figure it out because no one in my life was any, you know, it was just, they just worked.
Sure.
No, and we didn't have like anybody close to us that did anything in that realm. My girlfriend in high school, this one girl that I dated, her parents were friends with Billy Crystal's manager.
Cool.
Okay.
And I started asking them a lot of questions. And they were friends with like some show business people in New York, and they became. She was really great. She was a good friend, and then we dated for a little while. And her mom was really smart and funny. And I went to school and started acting and stuff. And then she literally had me call. The mom had me call her friend, who was an actress, because she saw that I was seriously thinking about doing this, and she had me call her friend, who did nothing but shit on show business.
What?
And tell me there's no way you should do this. This is not a career. This is, I did it. I was hot. I've had all this stuff going on.
Yeah.
But you end up old with no money, and it's a horrible thing to do, and it's a horrible life, and you give up so much in your life to go down this path.
Yeah.
You're going to have to sacrifice all of family and friends and all those good things for life to go into the arts, bless you. And for what? To end up old and broke.
Jesus.
It was a tirade. And it was
no kidding.
She completely set it up. And it was kind of brilliant because she set it up.
Yeah.
Blindsided me.
Yeah.
With this reality version of what could happen in show business. And I hung up and thought, well, that's not going to happen to me. And I kept going. I didn't think about it for a second.
It's awesome.
I was just she's nuts. But that's really what it takes. You have to dedicated
optimism that just like, I'm, because, and we said it before on this podcast, but if you sit down and as you begin a life in this business and think about all the odds that are against you and everything that has to happen and all, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, no one does it.
Oh, I remember oh, go ahead.
There was Michael Richards.
Yeah, a world famous linguist.
Jerry told me this great story.
You know what?
Him and Seinfeld were sitting in a cafe in New York on the street, and a guy came up and said, "Oh, it's so nice to meet you guys. I'm a big fan of that." Mm-hmm. And he said to Michael Richards, "I'm thinking about being an actor."
Yeah.
And Michael Richards shot back, "You'll never make it." And he was like, "What?"
Because I'm
like,
thinking, right?
What do you mean you're thinking about being an actor? No, that's not.
I'm going to do? Like maybe a definitive statement.
How about, I'm doing it. I'm not asking for permission. I'm not telling the world about it. I'm just it really, and that's really what it takes.
I love that. Yep, it does. It takes just delusional confidence and just.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so funny to even hear you mention the sacrifice part. I remember even just the moment a couple years, I think, after college, like 2007, when I knew. Are you good for another maybe like 25?
I'm totally good.
Okay, good. Where I knew, where I started saying no to, you know, all my friends post-college, that's a very social time still where everyone's like, we're just out of school and like everyone's trying to get their stuff together, but it's still like we're still partying a lot and hanging out. And I was saying no to a lot of birthday parties and camping trips because I was like, no, I'm going to drive to Santa Barbara and do 7 minutes for this guy I just met.
Yeah.
You know? But right. But I would do that and feel a little bit bad. Yeah. And then like once that shift happened where I was like, oh, I don't feel bad because I know this is what I have to do.
Yeah.
And it was like a very aha moment.
It's wild. It's really weird to like look back at it and figure those moments. I did a play in college and we were living off campus and my friends were having this party at our house. It was like not a lot of people at Rider had homes. Had places off campus. Everyone was like in the dorms.
Yeah.
And it was more of a commuter school even.
Yeah.
And we had like a big party house, a big old Victorian house, and it was like, you know, awesome. A great place.
Yeah.
And my friends, my roommates, were having this kick-ass party in my house. And I had a play. I had rehearsal for the play. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming back and I was at the Wawa. It's like 11 o'clock
at
night.
That's a gas station for those unfamiliar with
it. Yeah, in New Jersey, a Wawa is like a 7-Eleven.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm sitting in there, and I've got kind of makeup on. I've got like a bandana on my head, and I'm getting a sandwich at Wawa at 11 and knowing that there's a party going on there. And I was like, I thought this is so much cooler to be getting a turkey sandwich after rehearsal by myself in this place.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to go to the party, and I'll get there. But this moment right here... This is so much cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's such a weird thing to think is when you're 18 years old. But I really was like, this is so much better.
Yeah. But that's when you know, but I'm taking a step towards something that I really want to do. And that thing's going to take over my life.
Yeah. And little did I know that becoming a comedian, how many dinners you would have to make out of a place like a Wawa.
Oh, yeah.
At a gas station.
Airport, gift shops.
I'm going to make a whole dinner out of this gas station.
Yep. That's happened a lot.
Hey, I brought you something. That's why I was looking at my time. It's not because I'm rushing along. But I brought you a gift.
What?
Oh, God.
Brad, open it.
Right. You're going to have to fight over it.
Fight.
If you have a knife, if you have a knife, you'll be able to.
Dwarves always carry knives.
You know what's so great when he says shit like that? You don't know that's not true. Because there's no
book
stereotypes.
You've always expected that.
Like, yeah, dwarves have knives.
Dwarves have knives. Yeah. I didn't even flinch. I was
one of their powers. All right, Adam, I've seen it. And it's funny because I actually wrote something down related to this on the little map that we have for us to talk about.
If it's a signed Marriage Ref DVD, I'm going to be very excited.
It's a very large bread.
Oh, my God.
And you have a lot of bread, and not bread as in the slang for money. Bread as in bread.
Real bread.
And then
sourdough bread.
You made this.
You make this.
I made this yesterday.
Holy shit.
Wow.
This is maybe the greatest gift. You know, dude, here's what's great about getting a little older, too. Shit like this is so much cooler and sweeter
than
like, I don't know, man.
I don't know what comedians come on here and bring weed and... bongs and most pornography.
Most bring girls. No. They're like, hey, you want to turn? We're like, that's just so old.
My posse is 15-year-olds. Marin, I'm bringing you bread.
Yeah, Marin brought his old pipes. So this is like way cooler.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you, Tom.
Welcome.
Wow.
That's so awesome.
That looks so good.
It does look good.
When did you start getting into bread?
Yeah, dude.
I started making sourdough bread a couple of years ago when
it's the weirdest hobby.
Yeah, it is weird. But do you know how sourdough bread is made?
No idea.
Yeah, well, I didn't either.
All right, and fuck you, Dollop Podcast. We're going to get into how sourdough bread is made. Who says you can't learn something on this one?
Yeah, come on.
It's not all dick and fart jokes and Voltron stuff.
We have stuff here. I was writing on a show, and this one writer in the room was talking that he got into making sourdough bread, and he was kind of a scientific mind, this guy.
Holy shit, Adam Ray has a bread knife.
Wow, look at that.
How the hell do you have a bread knife?
I don't know, man.
I would have never pegged you for the guy that has a bread knife.
I literally make beefaroni, fruity pebbles, and sometimes spaghetti. And
apparently you carve the occasional loaf. That's not a euphemism.
If you have butter, this is going to be...
If you have butter is a great name of a new podcast.
Do you have butter?
Brad.
Brad, give it to the pro, dude. What are you doing?
Stop it.
Clearly,
am I like cutting against the grain?
Stop it.
Wait, listen, we make cookies, not
dwarves
bread.
Dwarves have knives, but they don't have serrated bread.
they have Swiss Army knives.
they have
nail clippers, and they call them knives.
Yeah.
This table's okay, right?
Yeah, you're fine.
Exactly.
Sourdough bread is made by... It's not a sharp knife. Sourdough bread...
Should I get another one?
No, it's okay. It'll be fine. There's yeast flying around us in this room right now.
This is great. It smells great, too.
There's literally yeast floating around us all the time. And if you put flour and water in a dish, the yeast will find it and start eating it. And that flour and water mixture will start to bubble. It's the yeast eating it and excreting gas. And that's how we discovered bread in ancient Egypt 5,000 years ago. So people, that becomes a living organism. It's a bacteria that creates, that you have to feed. So then that becomes a living thing. Yeah. And my daughter actually started it for me when I came home and talked about it. And she gave it to me at Christmas. And it becomes this living thing. You have to feed it. It's called a sourdough starter. It's called a starter.
Uh-huh.
And you start to, that's becomes the yeast that makes the bread. There's no commercial yeast in this stuff.
Really?
So, yeah. So, isn't that weird?
This is Sherman Oaks air yeast that we're eating right here.
Right, exactly.
Wait, so, how did this become you were like looking for a new hobby or...
No,
always love bread and...
No, I cook, but I don't really bake. And then I was like, let me check out this sourdough thing. And once you start making it, you're filling the house with bread, and it's like...
Is it also cathartic? Like,
yeah, it's meditative.
Yeah.
It smells amazing.
And it's delicious. It's just,
Wow, this is definitely... Like, this has a different flavor than what I'm... Like, it's good. It's good, and there's like... It's different than the normal sourdough bread you get at like a deli or something.
Dude,
that's good
this
bread.
This is so good,
that's
man.
Really good
We're
bread.
We're literally breaking bread together.
Yes.
This dude. Is fantastic.
And you know...
Oh, that's good.
And it also tastes better because it's a gift. And it also tastes better because it was homemade. And I know that you've been doing this a while, so I know that you like are good at this.
I am good at it, and I'm getting better at it.
Wow!
What are you gonna do? Is there any end game, like a Tom Papa?
Is there a Papa's pop up bread shop or something?
Maybe
Papa's Pop Tarts.
I thought about it. We were just at the Jersey Shore. I have this joke in my act where I say that people aim too high in life. You have to keep your dreams, lower the bar.
Yeah. Because then you will accomplish them.
You will accomplish it.
Yeah.
People that kill themselves so want to be like multimillionaires with yachts and stuff.
Yeah, you're like,
my dream when my act is over, when my career is over, bagel shop at the beach. Not owning it, just working in one. And it's just, it's like, how's that dream not coming true?
Yeah.
And not a nice beach, the Jersey Shore
you
in
can
the
do
winter.
That, you can do that tomorrow if you wanted to.
Right, exactly.
Let's be honest, those bagel shop employees, you're lit, like, you got a sweet life. I don't know how much you're making, so you're probably... You know,
you don't have dental.
If something goes wrong,
you don't really need it because you're eating soft bread all day, so you're fine.
You're happy.
Yeah, you can gum that.
There was a bagel store called Bagel Oasis that was across the street from Temple Beth Am, where I went
talk about aiming too high. Bagel Oasis.
And it was super chewy, and it was next to my temple growing up, and we would go there every Sunday in Seattle.
In Seattle.
In Temple Beth Am, and we'd go there, and they literally had... I mean, it smelled unbelievable. It was big, like they had sandwiches, everything, and then they also just had, it was almost like window shopping because they had a big display case and all the names and just, you know, clear see-through windows of just all the bagels just like one on top of each other and then just, you know, so many flavors.
Heaven.
And the employees were so cool, and they knew so much. They were like,
"That's the thing."
Like, we just got this new cinnamon raisin, but like with some of the turkey, but like do a little bit of mayo. You're yeah. like, Jesus, man! Like,
they care about it. I started making it, and it's when you look at ingredients of bread, like you could buy whole wheat bread in the store that you want to feed your family.
Yeah,
first ingredient is sugar. They use all sugar, and it's like 32 ingredients. In bread. They had to change the definition of bread so the FDA could rule on it. Because bread is only flour, water, salt, and yeast. That's it.
Wow.
That's what bread is. This stuff isn't bread, but they had to change the definition so they could actually make rules about
it. And actually call it bread.
So when you make it this, to make it like this, you've got to care. You've got to care about it. It's a process. It takes time. I started going up when I'm on the road now. I go visit these bakeries like that make it the right way with no commercial yeast that just do it this organic way. You're never going to meet a douchebag. You're never going to go into a place where a guy or a girl has dedicated their life to making bread. Yeah. That's not an asshole.
Nope.
You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
That's going to be a good person.
So not like the coffee snob where it's like that scene from the Gaffigan show where it's like, give me an Americano, where it's like a coffee with an espresso and they're like, oh, that'll ruin it. I'm not serving that to you.
No, these are good people.
You're right. There are certain lines of profession where it's just like the end product, the person going into it, I mean, the reasons going into it, I think, are like fun, and then also like it doesn't seem super stressful. I don't know.
No.
Much. Are you ever like, God damn it, I wish I had more butter? Like,
it does get stressful when you fail. Like, even just looking at this, like, this is pretty good. Like, that's called the crumb.
Yeah.
How much air is between it?
Okay. That
could, those holes could be a little bigger.
I didn't want to say anything, and I'm glad you brought it up.
This is like an.
I don't know much, but I know the holes could be bigger. And I was like, as soon as you cut it, I was like, oh, Jesus, tiny bread holes.
Is your next show going to be like Celebrity Bread Off, where it's like you're the judge instead of like Cupcake Wars or something? Yeah. You're like, will the yeast rise to the occasion? And then like, we'll be right back.
I would watch that.
That is so sad. It could actually work.
Well, it could work because you're a phenomenal host, and I'm not just tooting your horn, but Marriage Ref was one of my favorite shows.
Was it?
And I'm not even married, and I might never get married. But the dude, it was, and Geraldo was my favorite comic.
Oh, the best.
And that episode, all of them were so great. It's just the format was so, because it took comedians, you know, there's so many, people are constantly trying to find like an outlet for comedians to do commentary and like in a panel format. And that was so unique to me and so relatable and still like, I feel like people could still be very articulate and edgy without.
Yeah.
And even for somebody who wasn't married, I was just like, it's still relationship based.
Yeah.
And the give and take between you and the panel was so great. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, it's such a big thing in my head because there were so many levels to it.
Yeah.
It was like, I never was on something that was publicized so completely that was that big. You know, that was Seinfeld's thing. And it was supposed to be a small little show on Sunday nights. It was supposed to be like this little fun little marriage show. But then Leno's show crapped out.
Yeah,
when he moved to primetime.
Oh, and
they had five slots that they had to fill at 10 o'clock, and they convinced Jerry to go back on Thursday nights.
Jeez.
And then it became this huge thing.
Yeah.
And they were like advertising it during the Olympics. It became this gigantic thing.
Put billboards everywhere.
Everywhere. And but it was all about Jerry. It wasn't they weren't showing me at all. There was one promo where they showed my hands once. They were like literally all in on Jerry. And I was a little offended at the beginning, but at the end when it got panned because everybody thought it was going to be
a Seinfeld show.
Seinfeld part
right,
two.
Right, right.
And it wasn't. It was never supposed to be that
right,
way. It was supposed to be, we didn't even know what it was. It's part reality show, part talk show, part game show. It was
totally.
Like, we didn't really know what it was. And so when the critics came out and like attacked it, I didn't take the fall, which was kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
How did they attack it? God, it's so...
I don't know. Because
it's Jerry, and he created one of the greatest shows of all time, and then they think like, oh, it's going to be the next
Seinfeld
thing.
And they're shoving it down their throat. Yeah. Nobody likes, you know, people want to find things. Even if you took something...
Unless it's bread. Shove bread down our throats, and that's fine. But, but that's
Even if you take something really cool and an underground and you were to advertise the hell out of it, people would turn on it.
Yeah,
you know, they won't like it as much.
Well, and then that's what happened when people put a p- people with the U2 album free on your phone.
Right.
People were pissed.
They were pissed.
And they're like, what the hell is this free music? Yeah,
you're dictating what you I should like now.
Yeah, but that the concept of it was just so great because, and I'm saying this as someone who's currently engaged, getting married in September, there's so many disagreements where you're like, I wish we just had an outside ref to just come in, hear both sides from us, and go, yeah, you're totally right.
The concept was great.
Yeah.
Just that part of it was great. And married couples really, really liked that we were shining a light on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't exist right now.
No.
And it really feels like there was some major producer problems with that show.
Oh, really?
Who got in fights with the network, and that's why they killed it.
Really?
And yeah, and
so the ratings were still good.
The ratings were fine, war, and it was like this one individual really tore the thing down.
Rita Rudner.
Yeah, Rudner. Again.
How was it? How was it? I mean, you knew Greg for in New York days, yeah.
Greg was my best friend. He was the first comedian I ever ran into.
Wow.
I'd never been in a comedy club before. I went on stage as a comedian, and I got, after I went to school and all that stuff, but I really wanted to be a comedian, and I realized, as an actor, you've got to get parts, but as a comedian, you could just get some friends to sit in the audience and pay the cover, and you can get on stage.
Yep.
So on June 12th, 1993, I walked into the New York Comedy Club, and this one guy, Gary, was on stage, but Greg Giraldo was standing in the wings waiting to go on. And it was my five friends and maybe two other people in the audience. That was the whole audience. And Greg was sweating. He was and talking fast. He was just so nervous.
Oh, man.
He just didn't, you know, he'd only been doing it for like 6-8 months before I got there.
Wow.
So he was the elder statesman.
Yeah, and he was so nervous. And I was like, we became friends that night, and that was it. We just, it was super tight.
That's so great.
And well, then to go to the marriage ref.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one episode where it was Jerry Seinfeld,
Gwyneth Paltrow. That was, I mean,
and
I've
Greg
watched
Giraldo,
that episode maybe 90 times.
And me as the host. And at one point, like in the commercial break, I looked at Greg and he looked at me like, how the hell did we get here?
Yeah,
I love on TV with these Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
And he
was busting her balls like so beautifully.
Oh, he was so great. He was
we probably
so
count
great.
On money.
Yeah,
like,
just burning her money.
Yeah, burning
her.
Yeah.
Oh,
what was it like? I mean, so if great. You can talk about
it. It was a nice moment.
It was, what was it like just being friends with him and doing shows with him and shit with him?
He was just the greatest. He was, you know, I went through a period where I started stand up and then left it for like 6 months because I needed money and I just needed to do some personal stuff and I wasn't showing up at the clubs and he would call me at work. I was working in a small advertising agency. He would call me every day and say, what are you doing? Come on, let's go. You've got to come back. What do you do?
Oh,
I'm like,
awesome.
Oh, I will. But and he would call the next day. You weren't there last night. Why didn't you come? Like, he really
was
pushing me to come back.
It's so nice to hear that because in a business that's so individual and everyone thinks that comedians all hate each other and are all like super hyper competitive.
Just some of them.
Yeah. But there's a situation like that because who knows?
Yeah.
If he hadn't done that, you may have just got those paychecks and be like, oh, well, this is comfortable.
Yeah, you never know.
It's not what I want, but it's how I'm paying rent.
But that's the kind of guy he was. He was just such a giving, he's so smart and so just damn funny. He was just so, he was just such a natural. I mean, when we were first starting out, we just had like these silly jokes and he was already like starting to talk about like the difference between Protestants and Catholics and he like was always, he was a Harvard law graduate and he was just super smart. He was one of those guys that looking back, like he was too smart, like his brain
for
was
sure.
too busy.
Yeah.
And he couldn't, I'm just dumb enough to be happy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even kidding. Like I'm not an idiot, but I'm not so smart that the troubles of the world are always on my mind and I'm always dealing with reality and trying to wrestle it to the ground.
Right.
I'm dumb enough to be like, you know what? I know it exists, but I'm not going to let it bother me. I'm just going to go see my friends and eat some bread. Really? He couldn't shut off. His brain was one of those hyperactive brains.
Well,
and I think
ignorance is bliss, and that's a true statement.
He's just too aware.
It kind of turns on you, and especially when you start doing drugs and stuff like that, it, then you're really in a combination where it's like where it really becomes trouble.
Greg was one of those guys where, as an up and coming comic, I was coming up as he was really like doing the roast and really kind of hitting his prime.
Yeah,
where I would just look at him going, "Oh, I can't do that."
Yeah.
Like, there's some comics that you watch and go, okay,
yeah,
this is I can get into this business. And then you watch a guy like Geraldo and you're like, I can't write that. Yeah. There's no way in hell I could write a joke that
he's the first one that made such me want to start like doing topical stuff. Because like when he did that bit about the the story about the guy jumping off the cruise ship because he got in a fight with his wife,
Titanic.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then
Rose, get on the boat, Rose.
Yeah. and then the guy who got struck by lightning and survived, and then what was it? And then got divorced, or and then got in a fight with his wife, and then killed him. So what was it, like? Yeah. God himself couldn't do it, so it was like calling the experts. Right. You know? Anyway, but it was like he would take all these, you know, stories that were happening. I was like, oh shit! Like, you can get comedy from that too, from stuff that didn't happen to you, and have some commentary on it. He'd be having a field day with. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Well,
right now.
I really think that he would have been. He was poised to become our Jon Stewart.
Yep.
Like our generation's
the next. Like what Jim Jeffries is doing right now, I feel he could have slipped into.
Yeah. And I think,
or Jon Oliver.
Yeah. And you know, to have a Hispanic American as that voice, I think would have been even more relevant than these guys from other countries. I mean, it's nice, they're all smart, super funny guys. But to have like an American voice, Greg was just you don't have to, like, I could try and host that show, but I don't live and breathe politics.
Right.
Greg was really like just a natural. He was great as a host. He was great looking on camera. He was super smart. I always said you're going to be the next Bill Maher, Jon Stewart. He was really set up to be that guy. Yeah.
And you had a future president on the marriage ref.
Yeah. Trump was on the marriage ref.
What? Yeah. Yeah.
Trump was a guest.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
It was weird. Like,
insight to our current commander-in-chief?
Yeah. He's exactly the same guy. Like, he came in, he's dominant. He's like 6-something. I mean, he's a tall presence. He's always in the suit. And he came in, and I remember meeting him, and I said hello to him. And the first thing he said was, "We're going to do great in the ratings tonight. We're going to do great in the ratings tonight. Wait till you see the numbers. We're going to do great. We're going to do great."
Oh,
just obsessed.
All he cares about, I feel
obsessed.
Like.
Obsessed.
Yeah.
It works. I mean, he knew what he was doing. And then on the show, it was awful. This is when it started to go wrong. This is another problem with the marriage rep. It started off with Jerry's Rolodex. So it was like Madonna and Larry David and all these great people. And then, you know, you go through that, and then you got to just start finding your own three guests every night.
Right. And then NBC kind of, they're probably stepping in going like, well, we've got this guy on this show, and we want to push this.
What about
this?
The host of The Biggest Loser?
Yeah. that show was Donald Trump, Gloria Estefan, and Adam Carolla.
Okay.
Thank God for Adam, because other two are not
no comedy.
Funny.
Right. Yeah.
You're trying to do a comedy show looking in the eyes of Donald Trump and Gloria Estefan. You're in trouble.
You mean comedy legend Gloria Estefan?
Yeah.
Didn't bring it that night?
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was rough. And the one little weird side thing is, it was all about married couples.
Right.
And anytime Trump would make a comment trying to be funny, someone who's not funny, he would make a comment about the woman's body. He would make several times he made comments about the woman's breasts. Well, she's got something else that's pretty good.
Shut up.
And then he'd look at me and give me a little wink.
Like, back me up, buddy.
Like, I just nailed it.
Come on, be my pervert buddy here.
It's not for the camera.
Be my Billy Bush.
It's not going to be captured on television. He's he's literally giving me... And I remember back then thinking, I felt like this was like a date rape.
Dude, yes!
Like, he was schmoozing me and conning me and making me his friend and then violating me.
Yeah.
And did you kind of, did you wink back or did you?
I was just kind of,
You did what Billy Bush did.
Yeah.
Okay, man.
Right, okay, yeah. You just kind of went with it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, weird.
That is so telling.
So those two things.
And not surprising.
The stuff with the women's bodies and the thing with the ratings.
And see.
It's not a surprise. He told you what he was. He told you what he was going to do. It's not. There's no surprise here.
Right.
It's not like he came in acting like
no.
he was, Johnny Nice Guy and then turned into this guy.
The switch. It's like, no, he's been that way ever since.
I am being honest with you. If you don't like it, don't vote for me, but they did.
We have about, yeah, yeah, that's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother podcast.
When you got, can you?
We can do, we can do like the presidential ref show. And, yeah. And then just like Trump comes on. And
see, that version of him, had he, like when he did stuff like that in doses like that, you know, then you're like, ah, it's like the
he's a TV big, personality.
It's a rich dum-dum who says pervy shit and like not really harming anybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because you don't really take it seriously.
Yeah. Has nothing to do. It's not going to affect your life.
It's like the kid I knew in high school who wore overalls with no shirt because he had big arms. And he thought that was really cool and he was making a statement. And I was like, ah, you're like a cartoon character, man. You're not a real person to me.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not. It would be like that guy becoming your dad.
All of a sudden, your mom comes home like Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you got something to deal with.
We have a few minutes left, and I do want to ask. You mentioned it earlier in the just in talking about like the sacrifice needed for to make in this business and friendships and relationships. And Fitzsimmons talked with us a little bit about this and being like a successful father and husband and having a great career. Like, to me, I'm at a point where, you know, I feel like, you know, I dated for most of my 20s and now I'm in this point where I'm just making career first. And I can't imagine having anything else other than this to, I'm trying to put all my energy into that.
Right.
And so when I see people like you that are just crushing it on both ends, I'm very curious, like, man, I guess you can have both. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How do you balance it?
It's all comes down to what you want, you know? And there's some people, I come from a big family and family, even when I was starting, I remember saying out loud, like, I probably won't do any of that because I am going to be a comedian and all that. But, you know, nature kind of takes its course and you don't, you know, you're going to, it's almost similar to your high school story. It's like you were just going to become that guy. And even though your coach was going to scare the crap out of you, you were just going to do it. You were just going to do it. So if you're destined to become that guy, right, like you're getting married because it's just, it's in the cards. It's just happening. It's in your Nate's part of you.
Yep.
So it just kind of happened. And I felt like it was important. And I think that it's kind of grounding.
I was going to say, like Madrigal was telling me that, Al Madrigal, that he became more productive because he was like, now I have a schedule. I have to get all this stuff done by this because I have to get with my kids at this time.
Yeah, 100%. And it's... you know, look, you get to a certain point where, you know, everybody has their own path. But I got to a certain point where it's like, you know, what else is there? You know, you're around long enough. You go to enough movies. You see, you've gone to enough dinners with people. You're like, all right, that's all there is there. And as a comedian, I always felt like you want to digest and consume everything you can, so
you have opinions on everything, and
why I always said for myself, why would I pass on the biggest experience that you can have on the planet,
which is
to make other people,
you
know, to actually create people and raise them and be around them and get from them and all that back and forth. And it's like, why would I cut that off? Why would I not participate in that?
Sure.
And my wife was a comedian when we started, and she wasn't really sure if we were going to do it. But I knew as soon as I met her that we were going to do it. And I used to scare her when we were dating because I was like, "You're going to have my baby."
You hear that, guys? Like, that's a great pickup line.
It really
just
is.
Go up to women and be like, "You're going to have my babies."
She was like, "We've only been dating for a month." Like, she wanted to run away, but I was like, "No, it's definitely happening. You know, it's
that's
happening."
That's pretty
awesome. I'm not saying it's happening today, but it's definitely going to happen.
And people have asked me, like, when did I know that at the time my girlfriend would become my fiance and eventually become my wife? Is you just know, the same way you know when you went up on stage for the first time and you're like, oh my god, like this is
a beautiful realization.
This is the thing.
And to relate to both you, I knew when to put my third place rec league basketball trophy next to my booze. I knew that was where it was supposed to be,
right?
When I knew that was the only place I had in my apartment that it could be visible to the podcast guest to comment on.
Well, that's your destiny. That's your destiny.
Is this where I cry? Do I cry when you leave?
I have to say, when I look around, there's very little in here that could stay if you did change your life. I mean, everything that you love about this place, gone.
I know.
There's no woman.
The posters.
No woman's gonna want any of these posters.
No. I'm about 2 years.
No
away.
Child can be near any of these cords. Enough fire. You could never have fire.
How much incense?
All those DVDs, all that stuff.
Never
low?
Been touched.
No, that all has to be up super high.
Wait a minute. Yeah. At what point do you have to just give in to that? Like when you first guys
hard.
Got a house, when she was like, "Okay, we're putting your writer theater." You know,
look,
poster away, not in the living room. It's going in your man cave.
I was okay with that stuff.
Okay.
Like the man stuff, I didn't really have a hang on to. Like, as soon as I started dating my wife, I started changing my apartment just to trap her. Like, I started getting nice candles. I started getting nice things. I started a nice comforter. I was like, I didn't care about the guy stuff. That wasn't a struggle for
me. So it wasn't just the mattress on the floor with the sheet that gets washed once a year?
It was a futon. I'm not saying I was living in luxury. This woman loved me. We didn't even have a sink in the bathroom. She had to brush her teeth in the kitchen. And, you know, I was living with Kyle Dunnigan at the time.
Nice.
Oh, okay. And I remember you had to like brush your teeth and spit it between the dishes. In this kitchen, like I remember her
had accuracy.
I remember her literally gagging when she was brushing her teeth. No, this was pure love. But the hard part for me as a selfish comedian was when the babies show up.
Mm-hmm.
You can't live your life at all the way that you used to live your life.
Right.
I mean, basically, like you couldn't. My routine was to get the newspaper and my pad and my coffee and sit at the table and just have that little moment. Even just a half hour, just to read and write and have coffee and get into the creative head and go by. Even that basic little thing, I could no longer do.
Right, because you got to wake up and check on the baby. And
babies are screaming.
Is that a bummer?
Babies are crying. Yeah, it's a bummer. And it's hard to wrestle it, but it makes you less selfish ultimately. If you either you become less selfish or you just get in the car and never come back.
Yeah. Do you somehow compartmentalize that selfishness that you need for the career? Or like, you're like, tonight I am going to run that Conan set or to go to the coffee shop to write late because I need to do notes on this draft.
You got
to
be flexible. Yeah. I started going to the coffee shop around the corner. I started doing this little French cafe.
You adjust.
You adjust. But
life is about adjusting.
But your life is no longer your own.
Yeah,
they're this tiny little creature, and they own the house. You don't own the house. All of this is gone. There's no podcast going on here because the baby's going to be sleeping. There's no just not having food because you're not going out to get food. You have to feed. It's all the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you could just give in, if I could have given myself advice, I would just be like, don't fight it. Just go with it because it's over.
That is great advice.
It really is over. Yeah. But you're not, there's no way any of this stays.
So what you're saying is...
The stair stepper stays.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to get their hands stuck in the pedal.
Yeah, done. They're going to be working the thing. So basically, the advice from Tom Papa, pull out everybody.
Do it, but get ready. You're flipping.
Yeah.
You're not just going to fold this into your life.
Right.
This is a new life.
All
Are
right.
you going to have babies?
Hell yeah. My fiance is Chinese, so we got to make a Chinese dwarf.
We have to.
Is she little?
No,
she's tall.
She's tall?
Yeah.
What's the genetic odds?
Not to get too detailed, but 75% chance tall, 25% chance dwarf.
That's so a what big are you percentage. Rooting for?
Oh, like dwarf.
Gotta
come
root
on.
Dwarf.
Gotta Asian dwarf baby? Asian dwarf baby could end wars. Okay?
Also,
like, you just send that to Putin. He's like, I don't want to bomb anything anymore.
That could be the smallest one ever.
Right?
Because Asians are small to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Asian dwarf baby.
Are we going to start like a pool on the baby? Like if it is dwarf, like is there...
What,
can you tell during pregnancy?
Depends on the type of dwarfism. But like for my type of dwarfism, yes.
You could tell.
Yeah. Yeah. You can tell. So then you could start being like,
look at his penis. They're like, that's his head.
Yeah. So then you're like, okay, so the baby gate doesn't have to be that high. It's like a half foot off the ground.
Can they tell though? Or
Yeah.
I'm rooting dwarf.
Me too.
Right?
I am.
That's
totally
a sitcom in the making too.
Yeah.
It's just more fun.
It is. Yeah, also, you would be like, you know, you're going to crush the father thing regardless, I feel
there
like.
There you go. Well,
yeah,
that,
for sure.
That, and then I get longer before the kid can kick my ass. So I need it. I need it to be dwarf baby because, you know, you got to tell the teenager.
Authority.
Like, you can't go out. Like, if I have a 6'2" kid.
A 6'2" Chinese kid?
He's 6'2" doing... Chinese kid. Hey, it can happen, Yao Ming. You know,
They're never going to believe that you were the dad.
I think, I'm gonna walk up and pick up my kid from school and be like, "That dwarf's taking that baby." It's like, no, mine. This one's mine.
It would be kind of cool to be able to get a piggyback ride from a Chinese son. That would be pretty cool.
I won't have a Rascal scooter. I'm going to have my son.
Yeah, you'll never have to walk a mall again.
Oh, my God.
He's gonna like be running Tough Mudder competitions. I'm going to be Yoda on the back of Luke Skywalker's back. Just like, stop by the New Balance store, son. Daddy needs some new shoes.
Oh, it's so great. So are you going to try right away? You think you'll wait a little bit?
Oh, no. Let's go. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
Let's make some damn babies.
You're ready.
Good for you.
You know?
How old are you?
33. And that's like 72 in dwarf. So I really have to crank it up.
You're actually behind schedule. Right
Yeah, I got it. Like 5 years left.
No girlfriend.
35. Yeah.
35. Yeah. Single. Yeah. Sweet.
I have nieces and nephews that fill the void right now. I go home to Seattle every couple months to the twin 7-year-old girls. I was pretty much the only male influence other than my stepdad the first 5 years.
Right.
So very close to them, and they're that's filling the void of. And, the way I'm with them, everyone's like, "You're going to be a great dad," because I'm just so...
Yeah.
And I love it. I've always loved kids. But,
yeah.
You got to get the girl first.
No, look, I brought my nephew here today. You know, mm-hmm. Is he enjoying himself? No, but this is what an uncle does.
Well, he doesn't... To be fair, I saw him take a whiff of the incense and was like, "This place isn't for me." He's like, "I'm more of a Strawberry Fields incense."
I like how we've been doing the podcast and they've been watching videos on their phone the entire time.
And guess what? That's great that we have that now.
Yeah.
You know, because when they first came in, I was like, "Should I turn the TV on?" But like, I don't know what shows they like. Like, do they want to watch Game of Thrones or do they want, Miley Cyrus? Like,
no.
What do the kids watch?
It's all Rick and Morty.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. We had the creator on.
Did you?
Justin Roiland. Yeah.
Justin Roiland.
Oh, wow.
That show's fantastic.
He prank called a Thai restaurant as both Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And it was pretty damn legendary.
That's pretty great. That's pretty awesome.
Tom, this was unbelievable. And I
thank you so much. I'm glad we finally got to do it.
Dude, you are not only one of the best comics in the game, but like it is true, man. But there are very few people that like I always... And I've been fortunate, like, at the store when there's been a time where I'm going up, like, a few before you, and I can stay and always watch because you always have new stuff, and you're just, like, real smart and poignant and, like, I don't know, man. It's really always awesome to watch.
That.
And inspiring. You know, when you see somebody like you that's done so much and constantly, coming up with new stuff, it's, like, you need those, like nuggets of... Oh, fuck, I gotta like...
Yeah,
you know,
keep going.
Reminders. Yeah,
yeah no, mm-hmm. It's like whenever I watch Maria Bamford, it's just like...
Yeah.
You haven't seen her in a while, then you see her and you're like, oh, I haven't been writing.
She's doing it.
Yeah.
Watch Tom Papa's special, Human Mule. It's available right now on Amazon and Hulu. And then if you got the Amazon, you could watch him in Red Oaks.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
I wrote for that show and I appeared in a couple episodes.
Yeah. So watch Red Oaks on Amazon and subscribe to the podcast.
Come to Papa.
Yeah,
come to
so Papa. Good, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you're in New York or LA, check out the Come to Papa Live. They happen every now and then.
Like Largo, right?
Yeah, Largo and the Village Underground.
That's so great.
And then look for.
Hasn't Damon done some of them?
Yeah, we've had amazing guests. Damon's done a bunch of them.
Mel Brooks, Ray Romano.
Yeah, Amy Schumer, Al Madrigal, Bill Burr.
You had a lot of good people. Carl Frickin' Reiner.
Carl Reiner.
What?
He didn't do the live one. I did an interview with him in his house.
Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, amazing.
I just watched that documentary, the If You're Not in the Obit, Eat Breakfast.
Yeah, I went to the premiere for that. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So great.
He seems like just the greatest person.
I mean, no, we're leaving, but I was in his house interviewing him he's 90 years old. He's writing a book. He has it up on his computer. It's a little L-shaped desk.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's writing another book at 90. And he's like, yeah, this is where I wrote the first 12 Dick Van Dykes, right at this desk.
Oh, my God.
And no writer's room, nothing. Just wrote 12 of them by himself. He goes, and there was a woman. It was like a... Like this, like with a pool out back. And he said, I would always look down and this woman would be sunbathing there. My wife wouldn't know. And then I'd keep writing more Dick Van Dyke's 12 shows. And I said, do you ever get writer's block? You're 90 years old. You're writing another book. He goes, no, I never understood that. You say you want to write. Just sit down. Just start writing. I'm not saying it's going to be good, but why would you just write?
What are you stopping yourself for?
Completely dismissive of writer's block. Yeah. I love that. Just do it. And then check out in the future me and Tom Papa together.
We got to get this in before you go to your wedding, by the way.
In a Rob Zombie production.
That's right. It's coming.
Oh, God. If Rob Zombie's directing, I'm wearing a ton of makeup, aren't I?
No. You just be yourself. You just be yourself.
He's
you're
like, enough, no, Brad. You're ugly enough. Yeah, it works.
And also
yeah.
be on the lookout for Tom as the EP of Syphilis Tsunami coming to Netflix or PAX.
I
PAX
want my name been... on that project.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.